Time to get ready.
Of course. Ready for what?
It's the big interview. Thinking big, living big, talking big with market strategists, money managers, economists, authors, and more.
Get ready to feel the thunder.
Long chats with big brains meant to give you a better view of the big picture.
As far as brains go, I got the lion's share.
As money life goes big time.
Big reason for this success is you.
Literally.
Well, we're not just going big time in terms of a long interview. We're going big time in terms of our subject today. And when it comes to our subject, I can't think of anybody better to talk about it, because the big time news this week, the big news, has been the Fed and the end of tapering. And my guest is Doug Roberts. He is chief investment strategist at Channel Capital Research. He's also the author of Follow the Fed to Investment Success. If you want more information about him, the firm, or the book, channelcapitalresearch.com. And Doug is on Twitter. He's at Doug S. Roberts. But right now he's here on Money Life. And Doug, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back on, Chuck. It's,
you know,
always a great pleasure.
The question this time is kind of going to start with a softball. You wrote the book, Follow the Fed to Investment Success. The Fed has been daring investors to invest. It's done everything it could through the quantitative easing program. And the question that everybody has on their mind right now is, with the end of quantitative easing, are we now going to be following the Fed to investment failure going forward?
Not necessarily, Piers. One of the other things I said in my book is, watch what the Fed does, not necessarily what they say. So you have to look at market interest rates. And aside from a brief pop-up on Tuesday and Wednesday, you really haven't seen much of a jump in interest rates. Now, why is that? The main reason is as we're phasing out QE, the rest of the world is phasing it in quite strongly. So that's kind of counterbalancing that, because a lot of that liquidity is coming from those markets into here, simply because of the strength of the dollar. It's almost similar to a scenario that we had in the late 90s. So that means even though there may be an appearance of tightening, it may not necessarily be actually occurring in the markets. And despite the, you know, phase out of extraordinary monetary policy, there is actually no consensus on when the Fed will actually start tightening conventional monetary policy, and that seems to be a moving target, kind of a situation where the goalposts keep getting moved 10 yards further out each time they talk. So at this point, I think, you know, we still have probably some time to go in terms of the Fed's easy monetary policy.
Yeah, I mean, my expectation, because of what we've heard Janet Yellen say, has been all along that you get 2 months at least for them to sort of say, okay, the data is stable. We're not worried now that, like, there's going to be some sort of snapback just because we said we're ending QE. Then 6 months, because she said it would be 6 months, which means that the earliest we're going to see rates rise is middle of next year. At the same point, rates rising could be something where it's, you know, one or two little steps. It could be a big step. I don't think anybody's expecting it to be big steps, are they?
No, I think they're expecting it. It's really a question of whether it's successive steps or maybe a step, a pause, and then another step again. And by the way, I mean, although everybody's expecting, let's say, the second half of 2015, it could be, as you say, the beginning of the second half. It could be the end of the second half. Then as they tighten, I don't think anybody is anticipating a repeat of, let's say, 1994, where they raise successive meetings in increasing amounts, and suddenly the Fed funds rate comes from, let's say, a quarter of a point to 2.5 to 3.5. At this point, also, what you have to remember is there still is an ongoing battle between hawks and doves on the Feds, on the Federal Reserve, especially on the FOMC, and that battle is not nearly as conclusive as everybody seems to think it is. The real fear in the recent FOMC decision was that the Fed was leaning hawkish, simply because not so much that they phased out, you know, QE, that was expected, as was the expectation of, you know, the language of considerable period of time would be maintained. It was really the fact that there was not a tremendous focus on the low levels of inflation and the possibility of creeping deflation spreading from overseas to really the U.S. markets. But more importantly, it was the dissenters. previously you had hawkish dissents with Fisher and Plasser in the earlier statements being the dissenter, albeit for different reasons. Now you really had the two of them concurring with the majority opinion, and it was a dovish dissent by Katra Lakota of Minnesota being the primary dissent, giving the appearance that the Fed had moved toward a hawkish point of view. Although that may not necessarily be true, it just gives the appearance of it being so.
Okay. I want to get back to something that you said that I've asked others about, because to me it makes a lot of sense. You talked about how other central banks have been very accommodative. Here we are ending quantitative easing here, but other central banks, they have been doing their best to do their version of quantitative easing. If the idea here is to follow the Fed, don't fight the Fed, whatever you want to use as the phrase, are investors going to be better off taking the dare that those other central banks are doing and putting their money overseas at the point when they start to see the Fed act here? I mean, I get that, you know, obviously it's not a, hey, shift your money now. But when we get to that point, when you start to hear that rates are going up here, if the foreign central banks haven't changed their policy, is that going to be the time when you're going, okay, and now it's time to maybe start tilting my portfolio to international investments?
The real problem with international investments is now that we are in essentially a free trade world for the most part, that would have possibly been true, let's say, 20 to 30 years ago, when central banks eased, the money stayed primarily in the country in which the easing occurred. Right now, that money can flow anywhere it wants to be, and it tends to flow where you can get the best return on your money. And that really, at this point, is the United States, because it looks like, from a fixed income point of view, you can get the best returns on your money here because it's in a tightening mode, as long as you stay relatively short term, even though there may be a slight increase. That's balanced off if you stay into short to medium duration, fixed income instruments by basically the increase in yield. In addition to that, you have to remember these countries are easing in their local currencies, and right now the dollar is incredibly strong. So you're not only getting a slightly higher return on a yield basis in the United States, but you're also gaining in terms of appreciation from a strong dollar, which is primarily due to at least the expectation of a relatively tighter monetary policy as opposed to overseas. Again, this is very, very similar to what you saw in the late 1990s, where the Fed, appeared to tighten, but because of the strength of the dollar, because of the fact that there was so much easing overseas, the U.S. market tended to predominate. Matter of fact, at that time, one of the big carry trades was to borrow in yen, where basically his QE at that point was also going strong, and to then invest in dollars here in the United States in either fixed income or in terms of equities. That's why, as I say, I pay much less attention as to what the officials' decisions are as to what the actual effect is on rates. And that's really, if you look in the book, what we look at is not so much the standard Fed formulas of kind of what they're saying, what they're doing, but really what the actual end effect is on interest rates.
It's interesting to me that as much as we've talked about rates being low and QE here and what's going to happen, that as we look around the world, our rates haven't been that low. I mean, when you compare us to Germany and Japan, two countries that would be considered economic powers, even as bad as things have been here, if you've been a saver, they've still been better than what you could get in those countries.
That's been true for the most part. But, again, Japan is really, if we're talking about Japan, it's been really engaged in QE for about the last 25 years. And that shows no interest of stopping, thus the phrase, we're going Japanese. For the most part, the United States has had, a relatively good rate environment up until really the 2008 financial crisis, in which case, basically rates were taken down as low as possible and maintained there. Unlike, let's say, 2003, where they were taken down, but then after two or three years, raised fairly aggressively.
Quickly, because we are almost out of time here. When the Fed finally does move, do they have to move in a series of small steps to get to where they can reload the weapon in case they need to do this all over again? I mean, when the time comes that rates go up, will they eventually move up? It may take a year and a half, at least 3%, so that at some point they can give it back?
I think at this point, really what the Fed's looking for is they don't want to have to basically raise rates and then backtrack, because then they lose credibility. Right now, I think what the Fed is trying to do almost unilaterally is institute structural reform with banks so that at that point, when they raise rates, it doesn't trigger a liquidity crisis in which they're forced to throw massive amounts of money, irrespective of the level of rates, back into the market to stabilize it. However, you need some form of fundamental reform in which the legislative and basically executive branches of government participate on the fiscal side and also on the regulatory side in order to make it truly effective. Right now, the Fed is in an unfortunate position of being forced to do it alone.
Yeah, well, we're going to watch that position. And Doug, we're going to turn to you when we need more guidance on what we should be thinking of the Fed's moves. So thanks so much for joining us, and I look forward to chatting with you again in the not-too-distant future.
Thank you, Chuck.
Doug Roberts is the Chief Investment Strategist for Channel Capital Research. It's channelcapitalresearch.com. Again, his book, Follow the Fed to Investment Success, information there about that and much more. And also, he's on Twitter. He's at Doug S. Roberts. All right, we've hit the halfway pole on the Halloween edition of Money Life. Up next, Survey Says. We'll talk some great survey research and much more as Money Life continues.